The Team Never Quit podcast is sponsored by Navy Federal Credit Union. Visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate to check out member-exclusive offers during Military Appreciation Month.
Team Never Quit Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
We're going to, like, go out to an old farm where they have, you know, just...
You could have said it was just a good idea and not told about it.
You remember how, you know, like, when you're on deployment and you're stuck somewhere and you're just making up weights, you just find, like, an old bar and you tie some sandbags to it and get some engine parts.
The tires
and some
on tires. The end of, yeah, that was the best. The concrete tire. Or the, for the volleyball, or the, when we would set up those bladders.
Oh, concrete side
tire. Concrete side tire right there. Then... The Marines come up with that stuff quick.
Oh, yeah.
You're a Marine. Don't you know what we're talking about?
You know, like the Insta-gyms. When you're out in the middle of nowhere. And it's funny because now we part of our loadout has to be the gym. Like, you got to move that out there so we can
the
work out.
As
the war's not hard enough. But out in those.
You remember we used to put concrete inside the tires and put volleyball poles in them?
I never had.
As soon as the ball would hit the net, the whole thing
remember
would
fall.
Yeah. Remember that? Man, we would come up with every way we could to bring a little bit of home to where we were at.
Oh, yeah. I remember
small things.
My first platoon, we were doing this J set over in Egypt, and our task unit, it was Charlie platoon and then the Bravo platoon. It was Jocko's platoon.
Yeah.
It was like Jocko, Drago, Steve Drum, Rob O'Neill, like all these dudes. We called them the ogres. Scotty Neal was in that platoon, God rest his soul. And they called us.
That's probably why I separated we called them by coast after that platoon.
We called them the Bravo platoon pipe hitters, and they called us the Charlie platoon runway models. We had 10 guys in the platoon. We all were right around the same buds class together. I think the oldest guy was 22 years old. We had maybe two guys that weighed over 200 pounds, and everybody in that, there was a mandate in that platoon, you had to weigh over 200 pounds. So if they had a guy on it, if he was fluctuating the limit, he'd be sitting in there eating like Keebler Elf cookies, dunking them in peanut butter.
Peanut butter at night.
I remember Jocko comes in, and they were somehow, I don't know how this happened, but they were catering us over there. We're, you know, sleeping in tents, and we were working with, you know, with a counter force, the Egyptians, and... Of course, you know, they don't eat that much over there. And then you got these Navy SEALs coming over there. And it was like Egypt Air somehow was catering this. So they would bring in airplane meals and, you know, small airplane meals. So I remember Jocko saying, all right, Bravo Platoon, you guys get 4 meals. Charlie Platoon, you get 2 meals. And we're like, that just doesn't seem to make sense. And he's just like, you got to eat big to get big. If you weigh over 200 pounds, you get 4 meals. If you weigh under 200 pounds, you get 2 meals.
You know, that doesn't resonate with you until you're that heavy. And
oh,
you,
yeah.
You get hungry, and it's like the law of tonnage. And I've heard that explained. It's like, why does he get the same amount? Because if you're 120 pounds, I'm 260. How does that even make sense? Oh, well, your stomachs are the same size. I'm like, oh, I get that part too, okay? But you're still going to have to pack some more fuel in. Imagine a longer
Mine
trip.
Mine stretches further than yours does.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, back to the point you were saying about just making up different workout routines. I remember at one point, I come walking out of the tent in the morning, and there was some kind of structure. It looked kind of like a squat rack with some bars on it, but it wasn't a squat rack. It was just some piece of metal we were using for a drying rack. And I mean, Drago was squatting it, and there was two guys laying over it for weights. So they're just basically laying over it like an L, and he's squatting down with two guys on the sides for weights. And it was just like one of the most caveman workouts.
Thank God we didn't have cameras back then.
I know.
And then we would take turns leading the different PTs with the Egyptians. And I remember the Egyptians come out there one day, and they're like, because every time they would do it, every time the Bravo guys would do it, it would just be like, lift heavy things. It'd be like a rock or whatever, and just be like, hold over your head as long as possible. And then, of course, when the Egyptians wanted to do PT, it was like soccer.
Yeah. Always so, soccer.
So all the Bravo pipe hitters would just stand in front of the net. So there'd be like 12 goalies over there. And they'd be like, all right, Charlie, you guys run and kick the ball. We'll just stand here and block the net.
I don't play. Were you playing soccer with us in Ramadi when Charlie Mint was out there with us?
I remember playing soccer. Oh, my God. We did a couple times.
Redneck bastard.
I remember we played baseball one day. So
I found that picture of that baseball team we played on.
Yeah.
And then one of the guys that was on there, one of the contractors, one of the letter agency guys that was playing with us, he found me like last year. He's like, hey, man. He sent that picture to me. He's like, you remember this? And I was like,
is Mike in it too?
I'd double back.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
I was a shortstop.
That'd be cool.
I was and you're in it.
Really?
When we had the Miller High Life team shirts.
Yeah.
Somebody sent them to us. I think about that. If I remember, I'll do it. It's in my love me binder at the house.
You need to do an intro or something?
Yeah, let's do it.
Oh, okay.
It's all good. Welcome back to the podcast. You guys have been listening to some awesome people talking. If you guys haven't already, make sure you subscribe on YouTube. We're dropping new videos every single week. You guys don't want to miss that, especially this one. This one's going to be a lot of fun. We got some awesome guests in store, but before we get to them, let's get our Patreon question of the day out of the way.
Patreon Russell, question.
Russell asks, if you were on a deserted island, he put dessert. If you're on a deserted island, what gun would you carry and why? I don't know if that's the only thing I'd be worried about on a deserted island is a gun.
I wouldn't carry one if it was just me out there.
It's deserted. What do you need a gun
deserted
for?
Deserted island. Yeah.
But if you had to carry one.
In case of the zombie apocalypse?
Yeah.
You're on a deserted island because there was a zombie apocalypse. What gun would you be carrying?
Yeah.
And I was on an island?
You're on an island.
Most certainly would be a wheel gun of some sort.
I might have to probably say, I would have a 50 cal because.
How are you going to carry that?
It's a beast to carry around.
Dude, do I have to carry? You got to stipulate some of the rules here. Do I have to carry it every day?
He said
day?
Carry. So I'm going to go with a 357 wheel gun because it'll fire with sand in it. It won't rust.
But an AK-47, on the other hand, could do the same thing.
I would want a knife. Can we choose? Do we have to?
You can choose.
Are we on it together?
No, it's just
deserted.
It's deserted.
I mean, you know, do I shoot coconuts out of the tree with this gun? I mean, what am I doing with this gun?
Slingshot?
Just a knife.
I guess just a hand. Yeah, I would want a knife, if anything. Yeah, right. But
crossbow.
A handgun?
Crossbow.
I get my arrows back. I keep on.
Did it say what kind of weapon?
No, this is.
I say.
It says gun.
It says gun.
Yeah, and it says deserted island. So that doesn't mean you're alone. Because it's deserted.
What the hell does deserted mean?
Well, it could mean that the island has got.
Deserted?
I don't know.
You said dessert island. Yeah. So this is a trick question. Island. What if the
this
island
is
made of cream cheese?
Crossbow's probably pretty island. Good. That's a solid answer. You can fish with that. You can
I'd
shoot coconuts out of
dessert island.
There's crossbow. Coconut trees.
Yeah, crossbow
man.
Crossbow.
You can also, I don't know how to use that.
Yes, you do.
You don't know how to use a crossbow? You're a Marine. I thought Marines could figure anything out.
You can figure out a crossbow, babe.
I still go with knife. Probably.
You know the deal. It's not that you don't know. It's you just haven't been trained on it yet. Now they have the pneumatic. Where
I got
them
in my truck. I
just
put
imagine putting a bow and arrow on a rifle and instead of shooting a bullet, you're shooting an arrow. Same principle.
I've got the. But you can get your.
What happens when you run out of arrows? Then?
You go get it. You don't run out.
Yeah, you can't go back. You can't go get a bullet, can you? But you can go get an arrow.
You can make arrows.
They actually call them bolts, not arrows.
Yep. I'm sorry. Bolt.
Really?
Yeah. They're crafty.
900 feet per second. No, 400 feet per second, 120 yards is the one I got.
And there's ones that you can reload yourself. They have the ones that are pneumatic, have the CO2 cartridges. I have one that literally I shot a practice tip arrow through my targets and in through my well shed wall. It was so cool.
That's intense.
Yeah, it was
first time
real
I got
intense.
I was terrified to walk to try to cock it because I didn't know. I mean, the thing goes, it takes fingers off. On the weapon system itself, it says, do not put fingers here. Because if that line goes forward and your fingers are over top of that grip, take them right off.
Yeah, that is the difference between a rifle and hanging with bow and arrow, hunting like that.
Let's go with crossbow. I like crossbow.
Bust you up.
All right. Well, that's the answer, Russell.
Thanks for enjoy.
Hey, Russell, thanks for asking the question. If you want to ask a question to the guys, to the guests, patreon.com/teamneverquit. We got exclusive access to the show, merch. We put your name in the credits on YouTube, a lot of other cool stuff. Make sure you check us out
on
Patreon.
If you can fasten to it.
Well, I'm thinking you can build shelter with that, everything.
You can dig with it.
I just figured with a 50 cal. I
shut up, Mike. No, you're
saying 50 cal. If any ship comes with,
I like to be tough.
If any ship comes within 2 miles of that deserted island, I'm taking a shot at the ship. Yeah, it's a signal. They're going to say, I'm not going to shoot.
You can shoot a crossbow on fire into the air. They'll see that.
That makes more sense than taking out the people who are going to save you.
You can see the muzzle blast of a 50 at night for a mile.
I guarantee if you're sitting in the wheelhouse of a ship and a 50 cal impacts the side of that glass, you're going to know somebody's on that
island.
You're
going to turn the other way and go away from
it. You're probably not going to come over and see what's going on. Yeah,
somebody's shooting us. Go the other way.
Yeah.
Is it? It's kind of like that. Where's that one island at where there's still all the...
Palau.
Is that what it is?
It's unbelievable.
Where that one guy tried to go in there with the kayak was a couple years ago. And the same people have been on this island.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
That's South America.
That's completely different than what we're talking about. Yeah, that's... You're talking about the indigenous tribes
The indigenous people on
there. You can't go there. It's called...
Say Wataneo.
Say I... No, that's not it.
Say Wataneo.
Didn't he bring like a football with him,
too? They pulled two people off of it one time, and they died immediately.
The walrus.
But...
A guy went over there in a kayak. Remember that? And he brought like a basketball or football with him, and they killed him. They killed him.
He wanted to break.
They shoot at the airplanes, the helicopters.
Yeah,
fishermen drive over there. People try to help them. They're like, "Hey, help me."
They don't need help.
No, they don't need it.
They don't need it.
Yeah, there were stories where helicopters came over dropping supplies, and they're shooting bow and arrows at them and throwing spears at them.
I saw that Amazon
Sun Baganza.
Those Amazon folks. That their huts are on the water, their eyes have developed where they can see clear underwater. You seen that documentary? It's real. I'm not making.
Oh, what's
it
called?
We Are the Walrus.
They're not the people that live on those huts that just float on the water out there. I saw that.
What would he? Yeah, type kayaker killed by indigenous tribe on island. I guess
football
with a football. Because he brought it over to make friends with them.
They killed him.
They killed him.
Football.
There's signs everywhere as you're approaching.
Because
there's been stories of people who were shipwrecked on that island and they were killed by the indigenous people.
No.
Hey, what was the name of that movie?
Is it Over the Football?
Killed by island people.
Green something.
Indigenous.
I can't even spell
indigenous.
Green Inferno,
hardly say it.
Y'all don't watch that.
How do you... I-N-D...
Yeah, I don't watch that.
There you go, right?
Which one is it? Apparently this happens more frequently than we thought. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Man killed a remote island, tried to declare Jesus to try.
Okay, so I just wanted the name of...
I'm trying.
He tried to offer island. Gifts of... Yeah.
North Sentinel Island.
Obviously not them.
What was it, Sentinel Island?
It says North Sentinel Island. What does it say?
That is it. Yeah. That's it. North Sentinel Island.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
I heard even the ship's captain that dropped him off there got in trouble because he had been
supposed to go.
He had been warned,
right?
And supposedly, from what I read, you might want to fact check this.
It's all true.
Fact check.
But I'm pretty sure it was like his second attempt to go over there. And I mean, he just paddled in a little kayak and was like, "I'm going to bring you some, treats from the Western world." One thing was a football.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw how even Europeans throw a football, so you can imagine like some people have been it.
He probably threw the football at somebody, hit him in the face.
Yeah. Killed it for
him. That was
a rock or something.
Or he had it to him. He picked him up and took a bite out of the football.
This is not food.
Or they got sick.
Yeah, they got sick. Yeah. Like, here's your football. No. This tastes like leather.
Oh my gosh. Some people, man, you just can't fix.
Well, that was a great question. That just cued all kinds
of it. It did. Hey, we got a great couple, power couple in store for you guys today.
Powerful.
Mike Sowers, Sam Bonilla. So excited to have you guys. You guys, y'all probably know both of these folks. Mike, Navy SEAL, combat veteran, owner of Forged, philanthropist. You do a lot with Forged, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, sir.
Do they?
Sam.
Devastating.
Marine Corps, right? Marine.
Hoorah.
Oh, here we go.
A Navy SEAL and Marine walk into a bar. Here
we go. Walk into a podcast studio.
Navy SEAL and Marine walk into a podcast studio. You guys go all different ways with that. Those jokes last forever.
Best part about this, just so our viewers know this, our listeners know this, is that Sam is taller than Mike.
And she's a Marine, too. That's not a made-up thing.
Bio,
yeah, that's right here in the bio.
That's not that hard.
That's the coolest part about it is that she's head-to-toe legit.
Wait, keep talking me up. Go ahead.
Yeah, what else
finish
do you need?
My
I got a lot of stuff ahead. Here.
I'm sorry.
She has a master's degree in Homeland Security with a certificate in intelligence. I don't know if you guys knew that.
Ooh.
And paralegal studies, right?
Paranormal studies.
Me and too. Now you're the marketing manager and concept producer for Forged.
Oh, yeah, this is my boss.
And a social media influencer and a model.
Oh, thank you.
And an Instagram celebrity.
Yeah.
All these things. Mike, who are you again?
She's got the beauty and
this is Mike. Hell, the dude.
And this is Mike.
How'd that happen?
Because we've known each other. We've been through hell and back together. How did you? How do you do that, man?
Story.
That's a good job. I'm proud of you, man.
Yeah, how did you guys?
That's a good place to start.
Story, I'm still trying to figure that out.
How'd you guys? Yeah, how'd you guys meet? Sam?
Kick it off.
I don't know. Because they don't embellish it in church.
No, no, no. Go ahead. All right.
You want to hear the real story?
No one's heard the real story before.
I had to guess. I could probably guess about half of it. But anyway, go ahead.
We had actually met.
There I was.
So there I was, knee deep in grenade pins, 10 clicks out the damn lie.
Okay, good. Now go.
We had actually met through some mutual military friends at two different events.
Yeah, two different events.
Sam was living in L.A. and I was down in San Diego. And I just happened to be at the gym one night. And
maxing out?
It was like 10 o'clock at night. I was on a sit-up machine. I think I was somewhere around 1,200. I lost count.
Forearms down her calves night, dude. Burning it down. She saw it.
I get this notification on my phone. It was a Tinder notification on my phone. And it said, someone has super liked you. So, of course, I stopped my workout immediately. Click on there. And I had never had a super like. I wasn't even sure what
a super like was. That sounds amazing.
On Tinder, yeah.
I was kind of new to Tinder.
Yeah, so. Melly took me offline before I got before. To partake in any of all that. By the look of your face, it seems exciting.
I've never even heard that on any social platform. Super like.
Super like.
Super like. So I stop what I'm doing. I click and I see the picture.
You almost have to stop.
And I recognized her immediately, but I had never seen that picture before.
Was she in the gym with you?
No, she was still living in LA.
This was just on my phone.
On Tinder.
Okay. All right.
But it pops up in the profile
picture.
So I
sent him a message. I'm like, you look familiar because he popped up on my Tinder. And I was like, oh, I'll double like him or super like him, whatever. Get his attention.
Not whatever, you know.
So,
yeah, you were there.
Anybody smart with all those creds behind you?
We're just friends at this point, right?
That's what everybody says.
So I like her back, and that became an issue.
Wait a minute.
That's how relationships start.
Did you super like her back?
No,
he did not.
I did not.
He did not super like me back. So.
But
way to play the game, Mikey.
I did not. I did not even know super like was a thing. I wasn't sure with a super like button. I just went back and liked her. But she let me know right away that there was a super like button, and I should have super liked her. I would have if I would have known where
that
was.
So we were off to a great start.
So
at least you didn't call her by the wrong name like I did my wife the first time we met.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, that's another story.
That's usually a good start.
Yeah. There's alcohol involved. Anyway, go ahead.
So he invites me out to San Diego. He's like, you should come out. I'll give you Mikey's dive bar tour. I was like,
That's what he said. That's how I delivered it to you?
Oh, yeah. Well, because we're just friends, right? And I was like, oh, I'll bring my roommates with me, you know? So I had no intention of bringing my roommates with me.
I know,
me.
We know
So
that.
On the day before, I was like, oh, my roommate's canceled. Is it still cool if I come out? And he's like, of course, come on out.
I'm like, yeah, they can come down, sleep on a couch.
Come down
to the beach. No big deal.
So she was going to come down and bring a bunch of girls with her?
Well, that was the problem. Story.
Well, or your roommates were dudes?
Because I was trying to be casual about it because we're just friends, right? You know, so I was like, oh, I'll bring my girlfriends, you know.
Like, yeah, no big deal. You guys can sleep on my couch. Yeah. It's cool.
And then at the last minute, oh, they canceled. Is it still cool if I come alone? Absolutely.
Yeah, no problem. So we decided to go on Mikey's dive bar tour.
Oh.
So you got to see him in all his glory the first night you guys hung out.
Oh, yeah.
And did y'all,
talk,
around, did y'all ever talk on the phone or anything like that before that? Or was just...
We had lost touch. We had only met each other those couple times at those events.
Okay, yeah. so your first real time together was doing the tour?
Yeah,
hey, you telling me she's like you when she gets drunk?
No.
Sam, it's hard to tell how much she's had to drink. Because whether she drinks 2 drinks or 10 drinks, she still has all the same mannerisms and everything.
Well, that's cool, because you completely fucking fall apart.
For all the
wheels off this. Shit's laying on the ground. Anyway, I'm sorry, go ahead.
So let's caveat into, I am 1 year sober now.
1 year, 1 month.
1 year and 1 month. So I really picked the wrong year to stop drinking. Yeah, I mean, if you could pick
Haven't you ever seen Airplane? I picked the wrong year to stop drinking.
2020 was not the year to stop drinking.
No shit. All right. Okay, so
Mikey, he rolled that you was, out Mikey's dive bar tour.
I don't really remember much after that.
That's how it was. Oh, wow. There you go.
We went to all of San Diego's finest dive bar establishments. Yes, we did. And as you guys know, when you go to a dive bar, there's a lot of there's a lot of things you can learn about in a dive bar. And, you know, there's some criterias, too, as what is considered a dive bar. Mm-hmm. I like to think your selection has to be mainly whiskey in a dive bar. There has to be a picture of Burt Reynolds somewhere around this dive
there
bar.
There have to be Christmas lights.
Christmas lights need to be used.
Or some kind of vehicle that relates to Smokey and the Bandit or some form in the parking lot.
Exactly.
Christmas lights is a good one.
And you would be surprised. If you really go into a dive bar, spend some time there, dig around, you will find those Smokey and the Bandit references in those dive bars. And then last but not least, there needs to be a jukebox.
To
be an official dive bar, there needs to be a jukebox.
The pool table that doesn't lean to the, you know, in the back table. Where the green felt scratched up, none of the pool cues.
You're right.
I should add that
to the list.
Definitely. Some of them don't have those, right? But I mean, you can still
divey ones.
But it also needs the spilt beer stains.
That's what I'm talking about. It looks like somebody got murdered on it.
Yeah. And then there's that spot where it's all the way through to the slate there where the cue ball will actually stop in there.
Right before the cue ball right there, that's already down to the steel, right? And then the rest of it's got...
And then when you walk into the bathroom, smells just god-awful. Somebody drew a big-ass cock on the wall somewhere.
And there's one of those huge mints, not the regular ones.
But it's in pieces.
Yeah, thrown in the urinal.
Oh, yeah.
It says don't eat that.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Or there's no door or separator between the urinal and the toilet. So it's just the toilet there and the urinal.
People go in both.
You know, it makes for some real awkward situations.
This was our first date. Yeah. These dive bars, these dirty
man,
dive
you gotta
bars.
Just you gotta set the foundation. Like this is probably as worst as it's gonna get. We can build on this. Can only go up from here. Yeah.
So what is your favorite dive bar? I mean, y'all been around now and traveled around. What do you got?
The one in Vegas for sure, the really cool one.
There's no such thing
where
as a cool dive bar.
It's got the bullet in the wall.
Oh, what's it called? Yes. Yes.
From, tell them.
The Pioneer Inn. Have you guys ever been to the Pioneer Inn?
No,
where's that?
It's just outside of Vegas. No, it's outside of Vegas.
It's about an hour outside of Las Vegas. And it's actually, if you look up the Pioneer Inn, it's actually been used in a lot of movies. Five Finger Death Punch just did a video out there. And it looks the same as it did in the turn of the century. There's bullet holes in the wall where people got killed in poker games. And they have the actual citation written up right next to the bullet holes. I think they filmed scenes of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas out there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. Okay.
The Mexican with Brad Pitt. They filmed a few scenes in there. But it looks just like the turn of the century in there. And they actually, was it Clark Gable? He died in a plane crash out there in the desert. And they actually have parts of the plane there on the wall.
Pioneer Inn. It's the Pioneer Inn, or Pioneer Saloon.
But it's about an hour outside Las Vegas. But if you get to Las Vegas and you got a little free time, definitely go to the Pioneer Inn.
I can't think of another dive bar that competes with that one, right?
Yeah. We like the Chez J in Santa Monica. That has a lot of history too. Oh, yeah, man. They actually use it. What was the Billy Bob
in the Billy
Thornton,
Bob Thornton
show?
Series where he's an attorney?
Goliath. Have you guys seen that one?
I haven't watched it yet.
It's the bar that they film. They film quite a bit of the movie. Supposedly his office is right next door at this little Fleabag motel, which is actually
right
next
there
to
in
it.
Santa Monica.
But I mean, there's pictures of like elephants in the bar back in the day. It's like a whole like traveling circus was in there with peanut shells on the floor.
It's got the Christmas lights. It covers all the...
Have you ever been to McSorley's up in New York?
I've heard of McSorley's. Did we go there?
That's one of my favorite ones. Yeah. Old school.
Is that the one where they have the wishbones hanging on there where guys from the Civil War hung a wishbone on this string before they went there?
When the Titanic sank, that newspaper's in there. Really? They just recently put another bathroom in to separate the males and females. I mean, it's one of the long, narrow ones. They got two beers, light and dark.
It's just like the bathroom is just a trough that runs down the wall.
God. I mean, there's a turn of the century in there. And they don't clean it. There's dust. Like, you can't even imagine. And it is old school. And, I mean, they got that Irish guy in there. It's only 8 ounces for one of those. So you can get carried out of there pretty quick. But it is a lot of fun. Yeah. And then there's a military bar in Savannah, Georgia, that is probably one of the best ones I've ever seen. And because I can't think of it off the name.
We were just there for a Patriot tour.
What was that? I mean, bro.
That was a good one. I don't remember the name of it. That was awesome. Yeah. It was like an Irish bar.
I was going to say Shanahan, O'Reilly, or something, man, dude. It was
that. Did they have a bunch of plaques on the wall? Like Rangers, SEALs, Green Berets?
Everybody. I mean, he's had the best collection, more than a museum.
We went there for
and you can drink in there.
I got a sad story for you.
Did it burn down?
No, but if it's the same bar we're talking about, when we were...
At Eddie Gallagher's retirement.
Yep. We were in Savannah, Georgia, and they had the after party, I believe at the same bar, and Tyler Merritt from Nine Line was there, and he was good friends with the owner. And he said, hey, if there's anything on the walls here you want, let me know. And I was like, well, why would I take anything off this great collection? And he said they were actually closing the bar down, and that would be the last night that it was open.
What?
Yeah.
Dude, that's so sad. That was a great spot.
It was so cool.
It was fun. It was an amazing bar. Yeah, it was multiple levels.
Multiple levels, come down that cobblestone.
That's right.
Damn it.
And unfortunately, that's, you know, with what's happening in the country right now.
All the best dive bars are closing down.
All of these establishments that have been around 100 years.
Should we buy it and make a safe house out of it?
Are going out of business now. It's a sad story. I saw one the other day. It was a diner in L.A. It had been used in over 100 movies.
I've heard that.
This is a sad story. That's terrible.
Yeah, over 100 movies.
For free.
Yeah, he let him use it for free.
You know, all these celebrities, you know, they, I mean, all the way back to like Belushi and Will Ferrell and all these guys said, oh, it's one of my favorite spots to go to in L.A. And I saw on the news that it was going out of business. And it, I mean, it's happened over and over again. I saw that the arcade on the
it's
Santa Monica
Pier.
It's just
sad that no one came and helped and gave him the money to stay open after he helped everyone out with all these movies. I mean, that's sad.
What sucks is they don't have a choice.
Tell that dude just to hold on, man. That's too bad.
But it's everyone.
Enough actors in Hollywood with plenty of money. You think they would go in there and be like, give me a cheeseburger for $100.
Uh-huh.
Yep, exactly. I would assume that's what would have happened. Somebody could have at least come up with a GoFundMe or, you know, all these actors that basically used that restaurant in their movies, you know, directors and other people. You think they would have tried to save that.
That's where that's
happening to the best, though.
That's too bad.
Yeah, it's too bad that all of these mom and pops and these establishments that have, you know, been in the American culture for, you know, some of these 100 years, you know, multiple generations of families now, they're probably not going to make it, you know, out of this pandemic. And I mean, to me, it's just like we talk about dive bar, like that's history. It's just like when you walk in, you see all that stuff on the walls and they talk to you, like bullet holes in the walls or a fist in the wall. Mm. I mean, there was a bar in Encinitas, a little dive bar, and the lady there was telling us a story about John Wayne used to stop in there with all the actors. They would go down to Tijuana fishing.
Yeah.
And Encinitas was kind of halfway between L.A. and San Diego, and John Wayne and his old cowboy buddies would come in there and have some beers and get a little rowdy and just all kind of stories like that. And probably, you know, a place like that probably isn't going to make it through the pandemic. So it's sad to see establishments like that in mom and pop places, just places that have history, you know, and that's stuff that you don't read, you know, in a history book, but it's still, they're great stories.
Well, think about that throughout time. I mean, guys and gals always love to have a place to get together and do this no matter what. So those stories, they're hidden.
Danny's.
You don't ever talk about those.
In Coronado. Like
when you talk about everybody's life, there's always, everybody has a little spot they like to go to and do that. And as we're shifting through all this, it's like, yeah, some of those are shutting down, but you watch. So something will come back around out of it, take its spot.
Yeah.
When it comes to that, it's especially with our communities and what we like to do, that quiet when you dive, you know, dive down in there, just kind of like,
that will be a shame if all those places shut down, and because there's going to be a generation that didn't exist anymore, and then the history's gone.
Exactly. I mean,
it's not going to be in a book or anything.
You're right.
And they're not going to be able to talk about it. It's one of those things.
You can't believe how much fun you can have in there. Like our dad would put us in there back in the day, and we'd go eat a cheeseburger or something, and you kind of can't appreciate it. And then when you get older, you realize how much fun you can have.
And how good that damn cheeseburger was.
Oh, yeah. Dude, so good.
And you know it's...
I usually have the best cheeseburger.
You know it's so good they don't really add anything to the recipe. It's nothing. Just 100 years of grease and grizzle
on that flat top grill. Down the side, dude. Even the bun's glistening in the and it's just like,
but you know, it's kind of like the slam burger in Danny's. You're always like, what's the secret sauce? Like, you don't want to know what the secret sauce is. You
can't even imagine what happens in here, but don't worry, it's good.
But that's what I was going to say about Danny's. So remember they were telling us the new chick that's taking over is removing all the photos or something?
Is that right?
There was some rumor of that, but it didn't happen. Foolish.
Hey, when you were telling me that they took all the duck feet out and had that picture you showed me, I heard they were moving that down to wherever
the grinder
and putting it back.
Talking about the grinder?
Yeah, the grinder.
The last thing that I had heard is that they were actually keeping buds in the same spot.
That's what they're going to leave the grinder there. That's kind
of. And they were going to leave the grinder, but obviously, that's not the case.
Maybe they're going to redo it and put it back.
Because I was wanting to auction those. If you were auctioning off those feet, do you understand that every single one of us had to lay there?
Exactly.
Every single one of us had to lay there. I mean, you can't tell me there's nothing through that little spot.
Yeah.
I mean, that's hard. I wanted to be buried there. And in my will, before I got out, I was like, if I die, bury me under one of those.
I mean, that would actually make a pretty good tombstone. Just boom. Add those duck feet right to your
tombstone. Just stitzel your name underneath the feet.
That's a great idea. You know, hey, yeah, gold plate them, right? And then where you can lift them up and just keep pouring team guys in there.
I would be buried with my buds class. My buds
right
class
there. Right here. This is my buds class feet right here. I want my head right in and put my hand there with them, with the rest of my dudes.
Propped up. It's just your name, your buds class.
Yeah, just your buds class. That's awesome, that man. Just good. Put us in one hole together.
All right, so you guys went to a dive bar on your first date. He threw up all over you, and you were in love.
Is that true?
No, I did not throw up.
No, she threw up all over you, and y'all
I got into
up.
A fight.
You got in a fight?
She did get into a fight. I was actually holding back. It's the first date.
He held back. I'm like, you didn't jump in? He's like, what am I supposed to do?
Did she punch you on your first fight?
Well, it was three girls on one.
And that's a difficult situation as a man to be this.
Exactly.
I'm basically being a barrier like this, trying to push away and just getting slap boxed in the face from both sides.
He was having a kick-ass time, is what he's telling me. Getting beat up by three girls.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a tough situation when your girlfriend gets in a fight with other girls.
Why
are you not
your girlfriend yet? Right?
Yeah.
I thought y'all were being casual.
This was first date.
Well, I mean, you go on a date with a Marine. I mean, what do you expect? She's drinking whiskey.
First of all, I never got to go on a date with a Marine like that. We never had any of them run across us like.
I don't drink whiskey.
Anymore?
Not after that.
Is that your power fuel? Is that what you're, yeah. Oh, is that what you were running on that night?
Whiskey and makes her frisky.
Yeah.
All right, so you got a knockdown, drag-out gang fight. Mm-hmm. You did.
Yeah, we'll go with that. Yeah, there was... you know, no shots involved. Maybe just knives, chains. No, that's just joking.
Dude, it was something like out of a kung fu movie or like Lethal Weapon 4.
Hey, can she talk shit real good?
Oh, she can talk shit.
Does she?
Oh, yeah. She'll put on this presentable show here.
Is she a throat chop?
You add some whiskey with a Marine, and the Marine comes out.
That's like our mom. She's the sweetest thing, and when she even cusses, it sounds cool. But when she flips the switch, we want to take notes. Man, she could talk shit like make you feel bad.
Oh,
we talk a lot of shit, but you dish it out too.
Oh yeah,
so you can take.
Well, you have to have that ability in our community.
You have to.
People talk about us in the military, like when we go back and forth, we haze each other, go back and forth, like the mental games.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually training, because when you go over and if your enemy's talking smack to you and you get crushed mentally because he's pointing something out, then that's no good. And that's actually why we do that. And it's if you're not getting picked on around here, there's a problem. The more you get picked on, it's like, hey.
And our friends are brutal, right? Yeah.
Oh,
they tear each other
it's
up.
It's called love. Hey, how did you, because your family's all military. You're right. You got
my
aunts and uncles.
Your
daddy was
Marine.
A Marine, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
your dad's like an overachieving nexus.
Yeah,
he's like a cop, military, lawyer.
Did you tell him the land nav story yesterday, though? How he got lost out here? Marcus had to go get him
out here.
Mm-hmm.
God, where was I at when he got
it
back?
It was hysterical.
I don't know, but yeah, first time ever. I had to go.
He was on a boat his whole life, right?
I heard a little fear in the voice.
He called. He was climbing over barbed wire. He comes back. Was he not all cut up?
No. He was bleeding out of the head and everything. And I was like, hey, the one thing I told him before he let out, I was like, don't go over a fence or open a gate. You're in Valhalla. First thing I pulled up, Matt crawled that barbed wire fence over, man. I was like,
lucky to get shot.
He came That's out what right I told him.
Marcus and I were the QRF on the Gator.
I was like, you know, this is the first time I think you and I have ever had to go in and get a Marine out. I was like, no, they got to come get us.
Yeah, they're always saving us.
They're always saving us.
So, because your dad?
Yeah, I felt pretty good about it.
Is why I went in?
Is why you went in?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He knew what he told me, too. I was 17, going to the different recruiter office. He goes, I think you should go Air Force. It's a lot easier. It's going to be a lot better for you.
He's a smart man. I mean, we all say that. I don't even know. Yeah.
Because I should have gone Air Force.
When I first saw you, when he was like military, I was like, oh, Air Force, of course.
Yeah.
Of course, you didn't take his advice. You went straight to the Marine Corps.
Yeah. Yeah. Watch this. Yeah.
How was that? Was that a shock and all? I mean, you were raised by a Marine, so it was kind of like.
Yeah, and I prepared myself too for it. I loved boot camp. It was funny. It was. It was a lot of fun. But it was tough. It was hard, you know.
How long
but
did you serve?
4 years.
What was
as
your what was
intelligence
your
analyst?
Yeah. Intel. Smart lady, huh?
In the Air Wing Pogue.
That's a Marine term. Yeah, I had a Marine kept calling me that one time. I was like, what does that even fucking mean?
A shoe, Marine was calling like, you a
you hear him calling
yeah,
me.
They didn't know what I did.
Oh, you're
talking
an
about
Asian.
How Navy gives us rides and shit. And I was like, bro.
Call me a Finn.
Pogue. I got one of the dumbest names. Most terrifying man. One of the most terrifying men I ever met was my OCS, DI, Jason Jones. Yeah. Sergeant Major.
Those still buddies.
Best buddies.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's now the... Or fixing to be the sergeant major of first Marine Battalion.
Really?
Yeah, got it.
Oh, it's outstanding.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
I'm so proud of him. Yeah, he's a goddamn scary fucker.
Well,
anyway.
So how was that OCS?
Yeah, that's what I.
And it was
being a hardened battle
right
war
out of Ramadi.
Guy,
right out of Ramadi. Into, 2 weeks yeah. after Ramadi, I'm an OCS.
I remember you polishing all up, cutting your hair, shaving
oh,
your
yeah,
beard.
Oh yeah, I remember
look at this
all the
guy.
General orders and all that kind of shit, man.
I couldn't
and he
believe
kicked,
it.
Man. He oh, it sucked, bro.
I got an interview with the admiral today. Wow, that sounds like fun.
Oh, you got his ass kicked.
Yeah,
on that one.
And what a great story that was. Not for this podcast, but it was,
that was an epic story.
Yeah, yeah. Not for
anyway,
this one.
I yeah, because Marines, unbeknownst to most folks walking around the planet, I mean, they saved our asses.
Oh, you remember every
all
time we would
time.
Have to go to a Marine outpost, they would have it squared away, locked down security. And we'd go on, I mean, we loved going into battle with Marines.
Oh, man.
They would,
they
doesn't matter what
you.
It was.
They tell
would,
them what to do,
they
do
not.
You do not question.
Some of the things I would watch them do were, when they would go door to door, we were the sniper overwatch.
Oh, yeah.
Working with them, I was just thoroughly impressed. I mean, I watched me and him watch this one crew go door to door. A little bitty, their armor covered them. When they put their helmets on, you couldn't even see their face. You know, the rifle's kind of like this, man. They just didn't even care. I saw him sling his, this kid slung his rifle, and the damn barrel was dragging the ground.
Oh my
but
God.
He was, I mean, it looked like a boulder.
But I mean,
like a,
just
he was, dude, hard as.
Never questioned.
Dude, never
anything.
Said a word.
Yeah, yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And I mean, they would, y'all get in trouble when y'all hang out with us too long because.
Obviously.
Yeah, we relax.
Look at
y'all.
Me.
We'll see y'all shaving in the field and blousing your boots. And we were just kind of like, all right, okay.
Yeah, then when they were hanging out, so they'd have to shave. And then I was gunning
so much trouble. Like, what in the fuck is going on your face?
Dude.
Yeah. You remember I mean, all the Anglico guys that were out with, they'd be out with us for about 2 months. They come back, baseball hat, beard going on.
Got kicked on the side.
These are Marines.
Yeah.
Yes. We'd see them the next day.
Have a couple new patches
oh,
on
no.
there.
We'd see them the next day. They're clean shaven. Morale just down.
Yeah, we can get y'all into some trouble.
Like I
man.
Still won't walk on the grass. I won't cut across the grass when he. I'm like,
oh,
get
she
off
yells
the grass.
At me all the time. Stop walking on
don't
the grass.
Walk
it's a
here.
State park. I'm pretty sure
you don't
walk
with
walk
your hands
here.
In your pockets. You don't know.
Oh yeah. Okay. So best this gunny sergeant had this. I'm walking down the pathway, and this young Marine's up on top of the pull up bar. Arms over the pull-up bar with his hands in his pockets, hanging from the pull-up bar like that, right? And come to find out the next day, I guess the gunny walked up on him and was like, hey, Marine, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm just hanging out, gunny. And he was hanging out with his hands in his pockets.
Not
so the gunny put him up on that, hand, on that fucking pull-up bar so he could hang out with his hands in his pockets.
Dude, that's awesome. I got a lot of good Marine stories, but one of the best ones I remember so vividly. As we were in Bahrain walking down the avenue, and I was on the right side heading to the shopette, and on the left side right there, there's that garrison, and colors started coming down. And there was these two, you could tell they were younger sailors. They were kind of...
Stupid
looking. You know, they had their shirts untucked. You know,
immature. Kinda,
they were in civilian clothes, man. And when colors, they stopped, but they were coking and joking. And this freaking Marine was walked up behind him, and he didn't see him. They didn't see him. And they were, as colors, he was standing in formation. He was locked up, right? And they were coking and joking, doing colors. And see that red on that screen right there? So he had his high and tight, had blonde hair, typical looking Marine, and he started pulling that red from the feet. And I could see it from across the street, man. His face, by the time color stopped, and you heard, they kind of turned around and saw him, and he was as red as that freaking screen right there. And he started screaming at them, hand. Dude. I mean.
Terrible.
You know, I think they died, man. I don't even know. I've never seen anything like that. He cut them down, dude, and he marched them out of there. He was so pissed.
We were in formation at OCS doing drill. And the color started.
I didn't even move for 30 minutes. I was so scared.
And these two sailors were walking in dress whites, were walking down the street about 150 yards down the road, dude. My gunny's standing right next to me, and they keep walking while colors is going. And the same thing, dude. That old smoky hat he had on was damn near spinning around his head. And as soon as they closed out colors, he took off like a shot from a gun to get those kids. And I never saw him again, but.
Yeah, I think they do something special with them.
No
dudes.
One
like
did.
They throw him under the bridge. You never see him again. Because, I mean, when he screamed and then took off, it's like his right when his voice got to them and they turned around to see where it came from, he was already there. I mean, dude, he was pissed.
Yeah, it is special. That's a special breed of individual.
They are,
unless
man.
They transition from like an E6
whatever
to
y'all
E7.
Do to whatever y'all have to go through to get that.
Beat our ass is what they do.
There you have it.
Yeah, there's a big difference when you see colors on a Marine base and then colors on a Navy base. You know, most of the time in the teams, you hear that little 2-minute warning for colors.
Team
guys are diving off
this.
Running. When you're on a Marine base, especially, what is it, like Fridays where they play like the long colors?
The long colors,
It's a good, 5 minutes out
there
at attention.
You're just standing
there. Well, the reason they do this is because they're the ones that have to raise the flag.
Oh, yeah.
Like anytime we go anywhere and have to take something back, they're the ones that have to take their ass up there and
top of the hill.
Oh, yeah.
That's why they're so funny about it.
So 4 years until?
4 years until. I was,
how was that?
On the East Coast the whole time, but yeah, I loved it. I loved it. It set me up for success, I think, when I got out. I did have a TSSCI clearance.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, that's pretty good, right?
That's pretty good, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure I didn't.
Let into.
I think mine got taken away a couple times. But,
but it was good. I used my educational benefits while I was in. So I got my bachelor's while I was in Homeland Security.
Good.
Yeah. So
during a war.
Mike's like, I didn't have time to go to school. I had plenty of time as an intel Marine to go to school.
No, but that's a perfect time to get that. As we were going through all that, was the transition from how we had to fight as opposed to the old ways was completely different. So you're what you were seeing and learning was going together.
What'd you do when you got your degree in while you were in? What'd you do when you got out, right when you got out?
I started going to school for my master's. Actually, I started going to school for teaching first in Naperville, Illinois. I moved back home. And teaching was
not it.
I find out real quick. Those kids were just belligerent. They didn't want to listen to you at all outside of Chicago. It was hard. You know, it was very hard. And they said, you can't use a red pen. So I'm just getting out of the Marine Corps, right? I'm very by the book, not teaching little kids. You can't use a red pen because it'll give them bad thoughts. And you don't want to tell them 2 + 2 = 5. You know, you have to say, how did you get that answer? Not that it's wrong, but how did you get it? But it is wrong. It's 4. Nope. You have to explain and never use a red pen. And it was just so different. So I'm like, this is not for me. This is not for me.
Why would you change math?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do they call it? The Common Core now?
There's no wrong answers.
There's no wrong answers.
I believe there was when we were in school.
Sure.
There was only one right answer.
Yes, there was.
Most of the times, I didn't get that answer.
Yeah. Quickly found out that wasn't for me. So got my master's in Homeland Security. Intelligence studies, and got my paralegal certificate too.
What'd you do?
I started working in private investigations.
You were a dick?
Well, I didn't get my license. I was working towards it.
Okay.
So,
an interesting experience.
It was.
Should have been a spy.
It was pretty cool.
Are you a spy? Yeah.
I got to do surveillance.
So, what do they call those? You get halfway through being a dick? Is that a limp dick? Light.
I don't know. Andrew?
I don't know.
Had to do a lot of process serving, so that was interesting when you have to serve someone papers, a subpoena. So he would come with me.
Was that fun? Did you, like, dress up in different uniforms? What was that movie?
Yeah, I moved to San Diego out of L.A. because, I mean, it could take anywhere from 2 to 6
okay, so,
hours.
Okay, so back up. When you dump teaching,
yeah,
then you got your master's degree and paralegal degree.
I got out of Illinois. Were you doing that on my own?
Did you already know him when you started that?
When I was finishing up my master's, yeah.
Yeah, you were still doing your master's.
When How long you guys been together now?
5 years. 5 years this year. Yeah. So.
You want to put a ring on it?
That's fine. Well.
I mean, way to throw him on the spot.
No time like the present, guys.
Come to those who wait.
Okay.
Soon.
We're all saying it because we're married.
I mean, take a look at her.
Was he already doing?
I'm not going to do any better.
Yeah, she's sitting right here. We understand.
We know exactly what she looks like.
Perfectly clear in the beginning.
I've peaked. I'm not getting any younger.
Was he already? So, Mike, you got an extremely successful business, Forged.
Well, thank you.
I mean, it's, yeah.
You're welcome. Good job.
Thank you.
Let's just back it up. I remember when you were coming up with a design for that.
Yeah, when we were in Ramadi.
Yeah. So back it up before. How'd y'all meet? How'd you and Mojo meet?
Platoons walked into Platoons, the high bay downstairs. He was standing right there at the entryway, and I came bebopping in. Buddies right then.
I didn't. A funny story.
That's right? Is that the first time we met?
Yeah, when I rolled over into the platoon. Yeah. And actually, at that point, I couldn't tell you two apart as well as I can now. And I actually, it was kind of funny because I actually messed you two up when I came in there.
I didn't notice.
And I had actually, or no, I think it was Marcus, because you had actually came over to my house when I had a house in PB, I believe, while I was an instructor. And then I ran into Marcus, and he was like, hey, welcome to the platoon. Great to
see you. So I ran to you
and
out
I'm
the front
like,
there.
What are you talking about, man? I hung out with you a few times.
That's right. Like, who'd you live with down in PB?
Ryan Williams and Glenn Baton.
Okay, yeah.
Because I was walking down, I was looking for two guys, you and Dave Winkley. Yeah. Because they had just gotten back. And I remember I walked up to him, I kind of was saying something. And that was the thing, is I didn't know you how senior you were to me. And I forget where we were when I was like, wait a minute, dude. What was your bud's class? He's like, I came. I was like, you never said a damn word. Because I got put in the LPO position from the cap in. And then I was walking down to Dave Winkley. I was like, hey, bro, what's up, man? I was like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I just got back from deployment, about to go home, relax. I was like, feel like going on another deployment? Maybe Ramadi, worst place on the planet?
Yeah.
And he's like, I think I'm good. I'm like, nah, you're going. I'll see you over there. Dude, I signed.
Here's your orders.
Yeah, got both y'all right there.
Yeah, people tell me I look a little young for my age.
Especially back then.
Even when I was working as a civilian instructor at Buds, I was the proctor. I believe it's class 286, and they had the graduation dinner, and I won't name the CO, but everybody's dressed up. You know, you're wearing a suit and tie, and they do it now. They didn't do it when we went to Buds, but now they have a big graduation dinner, you know, after you get your certificate. It's a whole week long of, like, ceremonies.
That's cool.
And some, you know, rich guy in La Jolla had died, and he left a bunch of money. And in his will, he said, I want to pay for, which is really a nice idea, but he pays for a dinner that they have, and they have it right on the grinder. And basically set this thing up, like a whole, like, five-star meal, catered. It was really good. And the CO had come up. I was talking to I'm the proctor of the class. At this point, I think I'm like 37, 38 years old at the time. And the CO is coming over congratulating guys. Hey, congratulations.
Oh, Jesus.
And he comes up to me. He says, congratulations, son. What are you? he said, congratulations, son. What team are you going to? I said, sir, I'm actually the proctor of the class. I'm 38 years old. I've been an instructor here for 5 years.
Oh, my God.
like I said, I don't want to say his name. Get to know your men sometimes.
Mike Shoppers, sir. Great to meet you.
And of course, like any good team guy, he's like, yeah, I'm just messing with you.
Yeah, shut up, new guy.
How are all the guys doing?
Yeah, you're senior to him probably, most likely.
I know.
Which is funny, when I actually quit training as a civilian instructor, it was most of the guys from our generation, you know, who were all in the head shed there. So
the craziest part to me is that all of our guys are running the show now.
Yeah. And you always had a good story, you know, when they would come up there and talk and they would look at you because they know you knew them stories from Buds, you know, in the first platoon. Hey, you're not going to tell the story how I shot an AT-4 in a berm 14 feet in front of me. No, we'll keep
that. We'll talk about that.
We all have those stories, though.
Nobody remembers that.
So you guys got together. You were already running Forged when?
Yeah, he was.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So how
I
did,
was just helping out on the side.
But it was fairly young, though, right? You were helping out.
Well,
you had already owned Forged for a while.
We started Forged in 2007, and that was right after I'd got out of the military.
We just got back.
We just got back, and I got out, I believe it was probably 5 months, I think, after we got back from deployment. And if you guys remember, we just started making, I called it Knox actually at first, and we were just making t-shirts around the team and selling shirts. And I mean, honestly, I had always had the entrepreneur bug. It was something I always wanted to do, but you know, I was 13 years in the military. I wasn't really expecting, you know, to get out. I was gonna, you know, finish my career up. But we just started making t-shirts around the team. You guys remember we did like a tribute t-shirt for Elliot then, remember the Papa 10 shirt?
Yeah.
And that really was what sparked it in my mind. We had all the time in the world. You remember when Ramadi were sitting around a fire stoking it and everybody had their great idea.
They were sitting on those chairs and everybody had their binders rolled out because we had watched every movie and DVD we possibly had. And I remember you sitting out there going, I'm going to start a t-shirt company. And now look, we're sitting here, bro. And you did. And you grew it. And I just... that's amazing sticking to that.
I mean, it was probably idea number 7. Because we'd all be out there around the fire putting out all these ideas. You know, Team Guys is just this factory of different ideas going on in her head and everybody spitting out ideas. And the good thing about Team Guys is they're brutally honest.
Yeah.
So you would be like, hey, I got this idea. You know, I'm going to create this. And they'd be like, that's the dumbest idea.
There'd be a moment of silence and then be like, that's the dumbest I ever even heard of in my entire life.
You just need to go haze yourself right now. That will not work.
Good. Go to bed.
So from where it started, basically, like you could honestly say in the garage or in the trunk of your car to where it is now, it's just grown. You could literally say it's a worldwide brand.
Yeah, and we're definitely, especially once we incorporated the Murph Challenge into Forged. You know, Forged also runs the Murph Challenge, which is an annual fundraiser that honors Lieutenant Michael P. Murphy, and we've raised over, I believe now at least 1.25 million for the Michael P. Murphy Memorial Scholarship Foundation.
Wow. And the museum.
Museum. Mm-hmm. That should be opening this year. Got delayed because of COVID.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
we'll definitely have to get out there for the opening ceremonies.
For the gala in April, yeah.
Yeah, so they're actually going to be, is it in April now?
The gala's in April, and then the golf tournament's in June. Uh-huh. So they'll be doing walk-throughs through the museum.
Anytime there's, you know, an opportunity to go to a Team Guy golf tournament, never turn that down.
Never turn that down. I don't know why they call them golf tournaments, but yeah, that's a great idea.
Oh, the golf tournament in Dubois boot campaign's golf tournament, right?
Yeah, you guys got to come up to my neck of the woods.
Remember
up in Pennsylvania.
That one last year?
We've done that a few times. That is awesome.
That one is awesome.
We would want to get up there every year if we could. It got shut down last year, but we had a blast.
Going with Paul Craig?
Yeah, with the Craig brothers.
Billy Craig.
A lot of fun.
I got a live video of that one, boys.
Mikey, that last time we're singing so loud over the karaoke machine.
Yeah, he was on the back of the golf cart.
The funny thing was, I think it was supposed to, we were supposed to be like a foursome, and then me and Morgan were in the same golf cart, so all the team guys just gravitated
like
to being in.
Everyone just started singing because we had the speaker in the back. We're blasting Thin Lizzy, and everyone just started following.
I think we had about 16 people golfing in our crew. By the time we got to the fourth hole, I think everybody else in the golf tournament just followed us and watched us. They just quit playing golf.
I wish we could pull up that video where you were singing with Elvis.
So hard.
That was singing Elvis is out there.
You were like, don't talk on Marcus's backswing. Remember that?
Yeah, Marcus was getting all serious.
He was.
Don't talk on my backswing.
So serious.
Was I?
So serious. Yeah.
I don't think anybody was serious about the eighth hole.
No.
I don't remember much after that.
Yeah, that was good.
Dude, you started singing AC/DC. I was like, we shifted gears. Remember that?
So funny.
Gonna get rowdy.
Sam and I were standing over there on the tee box, and he was just over there going to work.
That's when Mike was still drinking. Yeah. Yep.
They had a karaoke station set up at one of the holes, and we decided we should probably take this karaoke machine mobile. So just like good team guys, we busted out some bungee cords, riggers tape, zip ties, this thing to the golf cart.
Mm. That was hysterical.
I probably wasn't singing as good as I thought I was in my mind after I saw the videos that made it on social media.
It all comes out of that scene from Navy SEALs.
The boys are back in town.
Boys back in town. As soon as that goes on, it's like a trigger in our head.
Just didn't sound as good when we were doing it.
Every time you get team guys out for a golf outing, I think every team guy remembers that, and they try to recreate that.
Yeah, reenact it.
We had a golf tournament in San Diego one time, and which I learned, putting on charity golf tournaments, it's like a whole job in itself. And of course, you know, people want to come out and like, hey, I want to golf with some team guys. So, you know, you ask your active duty buddies, it's in San Diego, they come out and it's always fun. But at the end, like, you're already worried about like, hey, we have to raise a certain amount of money to donate to charity. And then the owner of the golf course comes in. He's like, well, this golf cart got drove into this lake and these two got flipped.
No. We can't
find
these.
Four people didn't turn their gloves in.
Somebody's bathing in the pond.
You're sitting there like crossing out. Your profit line's getting lower and lower.
Because you guys, y'all do a lot of things for multiple foundations. But Sam, you're an influencer now. I mean, that's how heavy you are on social media.
That's how heavy.
Hey, that's the best way.
Yeah, how it's
that
fun.
Was that something? Did that just kind of? Because you're like the.
I guess
the only influencer we talk about.
I mean, really? Yeah. No.
How about to be an avatar in a
Mike's
freaking video
an influencer
game?
Influencer now too.
Can we not talk about that?
How did that? Did that just kind of gradually come?
I guess
about,
just
or?
Through Instagram, you start getting more and more followers, and then. Once you build a following, people, you know, different companies want you to rep their brand. So I started getting more and more companies, but then it got to the point where it was too many. Remember, we were like, we got to take pictures with these workout supplements and leggings, and it got to be a lot.
It can be too much, right?
It can.
You guys
got
exactly.
And then you're on social media constantly, and I couldn't do it anymore because between running Mike's account, my account, Forge, the Murph Challenge, our Adventures account, it's like six different accounts, and it just got to be
which is
too much.
On there, ultimately, is six different lives, right? You have
exactly.
to, you have to, you gotta put everything you got into.
And then it becomes, you have your real life, and then you have your social media life, because you're trying to post everything on there with multiple different accounts. So
it is like living in a virtual world that is reality, because you can look into that virtual world, say something, and then you can see somebody react to it in front of you. It's like a joystick
like
on a video
the one
game,
when
right?
they had the Adventures, one of those pulled up, like the shark dive. Everyone's like, that looks amazing. We fought probably that whole time arguing with each other. You don't see what goes into it. It just looks like fun, right? But it takes a lot. That goes into these adventures, you know, the scuba diving, the
it's actually
rappelling, the rock
good
climbing.
Story behind this. So the first
Mikey, there's always a good story when you tell it.
The first trip that we ever went on as a couple, we went down to Costa Rica, and so I rent this dive boat. I think it was us and one other couple on the boat, and they take us out to this reef, and
mind you, I didn't like the water at all. I never got into the water. Fish just freaked me out. Scared the crap out of me.
Oh, yeah. What the hell? Jump into a
so,
eating
I mean,
frenzy.
This is later on once he got me. Well, go ahead.
So we went from Sam not wanting to get into the water, me having to beg her to get into water.
Beg? No. This was our first excursion, snorkeling trip, and he says, get in the fucking water now. And so I jumped in the water.
I mean, you got to give me a little credit.
Not yelling,
motivating. I paid $1,500.
Oh, there it is, right there. Hey, girl.
So
get in the water.
We get up to the reef, and, you know, I used, you know, my nice instructor skills to try to get her to get in the water and enjoy it and see all the colorful fish and corals. And so I get in the water. I'm showing her it's safe. And, you know, after 15, 20 minutes of that, I just, you know, went into a little deeper instructor mode, tried to get her in water, but she loved it. After that,
she completely
loved it.
We got scuba, well, I did. I got scuba certified, and then we were just constantly free diving, snorkeling.
And we went all the way, you know, now we're going on shark dives together.
Yeah.
She's down there.
I love it.
It's a different world.
It is. Oh. You know? Oh, yeah. But that's good. He really brought me out of my comfort zone with that.
Where's y'all's favorite dive spot so far?
Oh, I love Mexico.
Yeah, Cozumel is
yeah, we say Cozumel
amazing.
Here.
Cozumel.
But yeah, I think.
Cozumel.
Puerto Rico.
Tomato.
Cozumel.
You can obviously tell a team guy that likes to dive after the military when it SDVs.
Exactly. Well, that's, you know how people love to say that, oh, you're a SEAL, you love cold water. You're like, I don't get in cold water now unless someone's paying me. Like, cold water is not my friend. When we dive now, you know, we're going to the Caribbean. We're going somewhere where the water's clear and the water's warm. And even when I do go diving in the Caribbean, now I bring a wetsuit with me. You know, one lesson I learned after Buds, it's like, there's a reason they issue you, a dozen wetsuits when you get to the team. It's because you don't need to be cold.
Right.
Yeah, you don't get paid to be miserable anymore.
I will take the extra 2 minutes to do a change out and take off my wetsuit once I hit the beach versus skinning it and going in the water. Because you always know how that happens. It's always, you get that motivated chief or LPO that's like, all right, guys, we're just going to skin it on this one. And then you're waiting to do the insert. And you just always get wet. It's just how it is. Even if you're in a boat, somehow you hit a rogue wave and you just get completely soaked. And then as soon as you know you're waiting to insert, all of a sudden it's hurry up and wait. And now you're waiting. They're supposed to be hit the target, go. It's 4 hours of waiting, wet and cold. And you're looking over at the guys who decided not to wear a wetsuit. And they're just shivering and jackhammering in a boat, trying to cover up with a gas bladder or something ridiculous.
So you're saying it's not as sexy as the commercials you see for the Navy SEALs and in the movies?
Oh, yeah. That's always great.
I love being Marines as sexy. Is what you see on the TV?
Yeah. We were talking about that too, watching that Navy SEALs movie. The stuff that recruited us, like when you watched it, them coming out of the submarine, chasing that boat down, having to climb up and take it all down, that was the sexiest thing I'd ever seen. I was like, I can't wait to do that. Well, I actually had to do that exact same thing, and it was the most miserable. I thought we were going to die every second. You know what I mean? It was hardcore.
It was the most horrific thing you've had to do.
Yeah, it was unbelievable that we could get that done. It truly was, but.
But if you look at most of the Navy recruiting commercials, it's either a pilot, you know, just flying at Mach 1, or it's, you know, team guys or SBU guys in a boat doing all these cool takedowns and stuff like that, which is like 2% of what the Navy does.
It's like, yeah.
And you're so pissed off by the time you get there. That's why we move like that, because we're cold, wet, miserable. I got to get through here because you can warm up.
But, you know, it takes it back, like, after Hell Week, you make it through Hell Week, and then you're doing like hydro reconnaissance, and you're out there with a lead line and a slate, and you're like, I just went through, you know, this week of hell, and tell me this isn't really what team guys do. Tell me I'm not going to be out in the surf zone every with a lead line and slate.
I think that's a thing. And hydro Hell Week, I said the exact thing. I'm like, this is bullshit. We weren't supposed to have a gun. What are we doing out here being miserable? This sucks.
Yeah,
I'm like, this is your job, man. I'm like, oh, okay. Roger that.
Let me circle back. As a social media influencer and a successful businessman, that carries you guys. Are you ever home?
Is it a blessing
and a curse?
I would say it is. I mean, we both like to travel. You know, we're both type A personalities, you know, which makes us butt heads a lot of the times. But, you know, we have a lot of the same interest and, you know, a lot of the same goals. So for us, you know, being on the road and traveling and having these opportunities.
And we love creating content. We love it.
Yeah.
You know, that's our favorite part.
That's like the way, but you know, that's where we are as a culture these days. People live and breathe the content that's hanging on these social medias.
So you're basically the content referring to that's life. That's your life.
Mm-hmm.
So you're creating your life. And you're enjoying it, and everybody else is.
Absolutely. But we only put the good stuff up. You don't see the fights and all it takes.
So should we invent an alternate media source for that part?
The behind the scenes. Yeah. The adventures of Mikey.
Oh, my God. You imagine somebody did behind the scenes on us?
And it's tough. She actually taught me a lot about social. When we started dating, she's like, you know, you've made like 4 posts in 4 years on your Instagram account. And I was like, because we had a forged Instagram account in Murph Challenge, you know, for the business. But as far as the personal, I really didn't get into it that much. And, you know, I think it comes from our culture. Because social media wasn't huge. You know, we were like on MySpace and Facebook was just beginning, you know, when we got out of the teams. But, you know, in the military, especially in special operations, you know, social media is bad. Like, you don't have social media and you don't have. So it is a lesson once you get out to realize, yeah, I mean, like any tool, you know, you can use it, you know, positively and negatively. But she actually, you know, taught me how to use it positively.
Especially if you own a brand. People want to associate a face with that brand and know that he's living the brand and actually, you know, what you're advertising, right? I mean, that's the biggest thing.
Yeah, and it's relating to that audience now. It's a different dichotomy. You know, even when I was a budget instructor, I mean, especially when I was a civilian, I was getting older, we would have these briefs, you know, how to talk to the students and how the students are receptive. You know, most instructors, you know, would just, all right, yeah, that's fine. But we'd be like the YouTube generation. You know, these kids learn a different way than us. You know, they're receptive to different things. Granted, no one's receptive to get wet and sandy.
Yeah, I mean,
but as far as, you know, when you get into teaching people and giving them skill sets that they need and how to retain that information, it is different. It's funny because we used to have to teach, you know, a PowerPoint class. You know, we never really did a lot of PowerPoint before we came into the teams, where some of these kids now, you know, most of them actually, even in high school, they create PowerPoint briefs. So we would give this whole class on mission planning and PowerPoints, and the kids would just be looking at us like all bored, and I'd be like, oh, they're going to mess this up. And then they come out, and I mean, the brief is better than mine. I'm sitting there asking, you know, the officers, you know, hey, how'd you do that? How'd you incorporate that video in there? So as far as technology goes, like the newer students in the newer generation are way more advanced. But when you turn it back, just buds in itself, just the hard aspect of it, you know, getting through the mental game of it, that'll never change.
Yeah.
You're either receptive to it or you're not.
You guys ran into, I guess, kind of a proverbial hiccup. Was it in 2020 when the come and take it flag was considered a racist flag?
Oh, our resurgence shirt with Chris Pratt.
One of his shirts, yeah, and yeah, Chris
that
Pratt
was 2019.
Was that 19?
Mm-hmm.
I kind of lost track over 20.
So Chris Pratt was wearing our Don't Tread On Me shirt, and then out in the media, they're calling him a racist for wearing our a Don't Tread On Me flag.
Well, that's just ignorant. Same. That somebody so, does,
but that
that's somebody
that thing that came full circle.
Well, didn't
the
it? Thing is, we didn't even have the shirt on the website. It was an older shirt, so I everyone's like, so we're like, oh my god, we got to bring this back. And we talked to Chris Pratt about it, and he's like, hey, how about you just donate a portion to Brain Treatment Foundation for me, and that's it, you know. So we were like, this is great.
He's a good dude.
Yeah,
he saw it, really. Right?
Yeah, he's
Chris, the most normal person.
I never met him, but I've always heard good things about him.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, people always say, don't meet your heroes. And you just like, you know, you get met a lot of people on the movie and stuff like that. And there are a lot of people in Hollywood where it seems like they're out for their own agenda, or maybe they're a little two-faced. But Chris is just, he is what he is. I would say like Andy Dwyer, you know, he played from Parks and Recreation. Parks and Rec, yeah. You know, Chris is just, he's a normal dude. He's a funny dude. And he's never asked for anything in return.
He's always purchased his own apparel, too.
He purchases his own apparel. Mm-hmm. He's
from the Murph Challenge.
He's always promoted it. We did a Murph Challenge workout up at Jay Glazer's MVP Gym, Unbreakable Gym.
Unbreakable.
Up in L.A., right on Sunset Strip.
And Chris set up everything together. Everything. Made sure there was a camera team there for us. And he briefed everyone on the workout. And some people wouldn't put on the shirt. Like Tyga, remember? He's like, I don't need to wear the shirt. Chris is like, put on the shirt. And you're doing the workout.
I mean, just to be fair to Tyga, he was just working out in
the gym. He was just working
gym.
Out in the gym.
And there's you know, a lot of celebrities and big MMA fighters and pro athletes that work out at the Unbreakable Gym. And Chris just came in. He's like, all right, we're going to be briefing this exercise. Oh, and Tyga and his guys were leaving the gym. He's like, oh, no, Tyga,
no,
stop. Hey,
here.
You guys are going to be doing the merch challenge today.
Yeah.
And
awesome.
He was like, sure, Chris. Yeah, that's great. Throw a shirt on. And then after he started briefing, he's like, did you say 100 pull-ups? Oh.
Just to start.
Don't worry. We're going to have some assistance bands in here. But, I mean, everybody did it. It was a great experience. We're running down Sunset Strip. Like, these people are going by, you know, and they're like, oh, that looks like Chris Pratt right there.
Yeah.
And Sean Merriman, you know, and all these other, Randy Couture. And
TMZ was taking pictures. And then the next day, they're like, Chris Pratt's training with Navy SEALs to get fit for his wedding. Remember that?
it's just funny.
That's amazing how they spin that.
Oh, yeah.
That lets you know, like, all those tabloids. They just put whatever they want in there.
But it was cool.
But, yeah, it was a great experience. They actually had us on Fox News to come on and talk about the shirt.
Yeah, which is funny. Did you tell them that the back of the shirt had a version of the MLK quote on it?
Yeah, the quote that we used on the back of the shirt was actually taken from an MLK quote. So it was pretty funny that people would, you know, call that shirt out and say, oh, Chris Pratt has ties to white supremacy because it was a, you know, don't tread on me flag. And I mean, really, it was just symbols of American history and different flags and symbols that we had put together on the shirt, which the shirt was 7 years old. We didn't even have it in the inventory at the time. So that just lets you know how times are changing, and people can look at something and just, you know, assume that now that's considered racist. You know, I mean, there's people that will just say the American flag these days is racist. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like patriotism should not be confused with racism.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you should always take pride in your country. That's my opinion. That's how I believe. But if people aren't taking pride in ownership, pride in the flag, pride in your country, then what do you really have? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what makes every great organization, you know, every great nation has to have that pride. You know, has to have, you know, the commitment from the people, or you're just going to fall apart. And that's just how we looked at
it. Well, you can't have pride in anything if you haven't worked for it.
Exactly.
I think we have a great appreciation of nationalism because we flew that flag on every single op.
America was forged. Everything great.
We had to fight for it. We know what it's like to fight for it and stand up there and have to deal with all
that
stuff.
Way to fit that in. I like it.
There you go. Just, yeah, write that shit down. Plug.
Forged.
Fast forward to 2020. What was 2020 like for you guys as influencers, business owners? Like,
how did it be? 2020 was hard. You know, because now we're not traveling.
We all came in that kind of together. We were still talking. Uh-huh. We just... When on the lockdown, because we went to the ranch and we were joking around. I was like, hey, we're going to do this. Let's do this. Because we didn't have any idea how it was going to go, long that was going to last.
I had no idea.
We definitely had to use, you know, all the skills we learned in the teams, being flexible, being innovators. Just your basic task of just creating products. You know, we ran into obstacles. I mean, there were so many, you know, places around the world that shut down. So just basic, you know, getting materials, you know, getting things produced. Some of our manufacturers, they had to shut down.
And if I may, actually, with the Murph Challenge, that was the biggest obstacle because here you have a workout, right, that everyone does in the gym. Now they shut down all gyms. So all these official hosts that we have who sign up every year, I mean, they're closed down. So what did save us, though, is a lot of people were looking for challenges to do. Yeah. So they're Googling challenges, and the Murph Challenge would pop up. So they're like, what is this? So we actually had a lot of participation,
which is good. The NFL came online with that, too.
Yes, we did.
Remember that?
You did with the Washington Redskins. Yeah, they signed up as an official host.
Hey, how are you going to do? I was like, I'm going to be underneath my stairs right here with that mop handle trying to – hey, coming up with all those different ideas. Mm-hmm. That was fun. I mean, that was great.
It was great. Mm-hmm. So, and that's the great thing about the Murph Challenge is you can really do it anywhere. Mm-hmm. You don't need, except for a pull-up bar, you don't need equipment.
Got tree limbs somewhere.
Yeah.
Right.
We've had a handful of NFL teams sign up as official hosts. Mm-hmm. So any people that are listening right now that work for any professional sports organizations, open your mail because I've been sending you letters for the last 3 years to participate in the Murph Challenge. But
I'm pretty sure I was licking the envelopes and stamping them.
She may have proofread the letter. Actually, she probably wrote the entire thing.
My name's on it. But
we've had a lot, especially in the NFL, we've had quite a few NFL athletes that have participated in the Murph Challenge. It usually falls in the off season. So that does make it a little difficult for the organizations to have, official event at the facility.
Of course, it's the Murph Challenge. It's going to be uncomfortable for everybody. It's always at the wrong time when something, you know.
Of course.
But we have had, like, the Washington Redskins. We did a virtual one this year.
Marcus was on it.
And
Rob O'Neill were guests. Yeah.
When you guys got on there, which was funny after it was over and we talked to him. And the people behind it were like, there was more people online listening to you guys than the former Redskin players. Like, you know, people really wanted to hear the stories, and we really appreciate you coming on.
That was awesome.
That's how we're doing. Kind of when we got back, we got separated, and everybody went out and captured what they were supposed to, and we're kind of bringing it all together, just tightening those laces back up, and they're all falling into place. One thing y'all do, one thing we do, works together. We help each other to build this and watching out for each other.
Exactly.
I mean, the charities and everything that y'all do, including Forge, I mean, good job. I had this vision in my head. I'd just come out of the tent. You were already sitting there, had that binder in your lap, and you kind of had your head down, doing all that deal.
My bad idea binder.
I'll never forget that. And I remember what the weather was doing, dude. And I was like, what are you doing, man? He's like, oh, I'm getting this done. It's a t-shirt thing. I was like, okay. In that world, hell, we could have died the next day. You know, I was like, all right, cool. But it was those moments pulling out of there and seeing that was...
And we are very fortunate to have Forge and that we can help out charities through Forge, because this year was a really hard year for charities because they couldn't have events to raise money. So we were able to do that through the sale of the shirts, you know, and I love that we can do that.
And definitely for me, I'm sure same for Sam, that's really what makes all the hard work and all the long hours and effort really be worthwhile is being able to help our fellow veterans and first responders, and just having that ability. Like, it is a really good feeling, you know, just, you know, take most of the charities that we support, we have a connection with, you know, their families of our fallen brothers, yeah, or their
law police
officers that are in our local area. Mm-hmm. So just when you see that tragedy, or you talk to that Gold Star family and they let you know, what they're actually doing with their charities and how they're helping out service members. So just being able to, you know, make a shirt that represents exactly what they stand for, mm-hmm, and then donating to that organization, It's just such a good feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a fallen San Diego police officer in 2016, and with the Blue Line shirt, we raised $76,000 for his family. It just makes me so happy, you know?
Yeah.
That kind of stuff I love.
It's definitely very rewarding.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what we do. It's funny, some people don't see it that way, but you actually work hard to become successful. And then when we go to those functions, it's to show everybody else, like, hey, I accomplished something and I'm giving back to, mm-hmm, help out in my community. And that's how it comes back around. Like, hey, man, they'll help out in any way they can when they're doing good.
Mm-hmm.
You see that. And then when you're not doing good, people will help you.
Yep.
And that's how we had to do it, is just start building that back up. It kind of went away a long time ago. And as we're coming back in, it's like, hey, it's more important for us to take care of each other.
Yeah, absolutely, especially after this year.
Yeah,
you know,
to just the obstacles that everyone is facing this year. I mean, you can even, you know, even Hollywood shut down.
Right.
Like friends of ours that, you know, former team guys that work as stuntmen, and advisors on films.
That's one place that's not supposed to shut down.
Like, man, I'm on unemployment right now, you know, or I'm going to take contract jobs back overseas because there's just no work going on.
That's
right,
crazy.
Right
this now. Is one thing, because normally if times are bad out here, we'll work however hard we can to pay them to be entertained. To take, yep, our minds off of the bad stuff, and they took that away from us. You can't even, there's no new movies coming out, and
that's all right. All the old ones are good, better anyway.
Yeah, everybody's recycling all the films on Netflix. You're like, how is that in the top 10 now? You know,
dude, we've been cycling through the 80s, 90s movies. Rad came on.
Oh,
dude,
Rad, dude, that's on. So
bro,
great.
We
backflip off the Kicks Bowl.
What's up?
That crew,
that's
is
right,
rad.
Kicks Bowl, bro. So what's so? What's bowl. Next on Kicks Bowl?
Remember the spoon. That?
Yeah. The
spoon. Is Kicks even still around?
I don't think so.
It's a good question.
What's next? What's next for? I mean, what's on the horizon for Forge and you two?
Well, right now we're in the middle of a Texas campaign. You want to speak on that one with AJ Buckley?
Yeah, we're actually doing a campaign right now with AJ Buckley, one of the actors on SEAL Team. We've actually had great support from the entire SEAL Team cast. Max,
in the entire state,
Neil,
of Texas.
all the guys have been repping our shirts on actual episodes.
On episodes, yeah.
So last season,
that's huge, man.
Oh, it's so awesome.
It's great.
See, AJ Buckley's just been the absolute best. He wears the Uncommon Grit shirts on every episode. He makes it a point to make sure he's in Forged. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, AJ goes above and beyond.
He does.
I mean, he goes from scene to scene wearing Forged at different shirts. And we did, you know, Darren McBurnett, McBee, did Uncommon Grit. We did a collaboration with him where we used some of his images on our shirts.
Mm-hmm.
And
which that guy, his art's
awesome.
Amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Exactly.
His photography is incredible.
Is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And so SEAL Team had saw the shirts and the wardrobe had purchased some. And so that's kind of how it all got connected. And then AJ just took a liking to it and he contacted us. And, you know, it's great to get it out there. But if you can put something behind it, like, you know, just with all of our shirts, if there's some more meaning behind it, if we're giving back to something.
We do that with all the shirts.
But for the specific shirt, we talked to AJ because his character, Sonny Quinn, is a Texas character. Like, you can't have a show about SEALs without having some boisterous, loudmouth Texas character on there.
Yeah, you guys are welcome.
I thought we made that perfectly clear. Yeah, I mean, yeah,
it's
you
so
gotta
true.
Have one.
You know, and every, it's, you know, SEAL platoon, task unit, troop, there is always that guy from Texas.
Loud belly
in
laugher.
If you're real lucky, there's two of us.
Yeah, working pairs.
Or you got two twins on there that they will let you know they are from Texas every waking moment.
That's right. That's how we roll.
You'll see it on us when we walk in the door.
But it's another kind of pride too. And it just all worked out because we were actually going to do a state pride collection for our biggest states, you know, most popular states, most supportive states. Obviously, Texas
was
number one. Texas and California. Yeah. Think of that weird.
But California absolutely is patriotic, and there's more
San
veterans
Diego?
Living in California than there are in Texas, and more Californians serving in the military than.
And that's just the thing, especially in Southern California. There are a lot of veterans in Southern California. I mean, it's a lot of military pride there. It's just there's so many people in the state that, you know, you take, you know, San Francisco and L.A., they're going to outnumber all the people in San Diego. So, yeah, definitely, you know, California leans more liberal in that sense just because, you know, the population, the greater population is more liberal.
State.
But
it's the only time when I come off an airplane, I'm happy to be there.
Is that California?
Yeah, that's the truth, man. That's a...
It's cool because you got the ocean. You can go an hour north and get snow. You got
everything.
About
the ocean, but California is
great. It's something. I enjoyed our time there.
So anyway, you got the Texas brand.
So we worked with AJ, and we talked about doing the Texas Pride collection with him, the collaboration. And we asked him, you know, we're going to donate a portion of the proceeds to a charity of your choosing. And AJ suggested the Gary Sinise Foundation, which is an amazing foundation. Mm-hmm. And AJ had worked with Gary on, I believe it's CSI New York.
CSI, yeah.
So he had a personal relationship with Gary, and we were just, you know, we were 100% on board. Gary had came down to Bud's a few times while I was an instructor, and he would come down, he would talk with everybody, he would go to the hospital and, you know, visit wounded service members, and, you know, he's given away so much money.
I mean, they build homes for, you know, disabled veterans, and that's incredible.
And there's a lot of, you know, celebrities, professional athletes, and people who have foundations, but Gary has been doing this. I mean, I believe he started even back in the 80s before of the other...
He's our boss.
People got on board.
That kind of thing.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? He's been doing it a while.
So we were totally stoked about that. You know, having Gary Sinise Foundation on board, even some of our good friends, other team guys are on the board there. Jason Redman, Billy Wagasy. So
we were in Ramadi with Wags.
Yep. So I gave Billy a call. You know, he was a board member, and talked to him about it, and he, you know, put us in touch with all the people that were
super smart
decision makers.
I was just going to say, brilliant.
Looking at him, he's terrifying.
See, I've never seen him. I've only talked to him on the phone.
Oh man, when we were in, dude. He's got a degree from Notre Dame and
Pepperdine law degree. Yeah,
just an overachieving Nexus too.
Wags.
Yeah,
he's cool, man.
Do you remember when the general came in to speak to us when we were in Ramadi, and he was like, "I just want to speak to the, you know, E6 and below," and they came in, started talking, and then he got into a little back and forth with Billy.
Yeah,
and he was like, "Hey, this is supposed to be E6 and below," and he's like, "Yeah, I'm an E5." And he was like looking, because, you know, Billy had a law degree from Pepperdine at that time, played football for Notre Dame, just a very, you know, well-educated, experienced guy. And so finally the general's like, "Yeah, we'll just talk offline."
Well, mind you, in Ramadi, he didn't look like that. You remember that? I would go into his tent, I was like, "Clean this up." He's one of our snipers. He wouldn't bathe. And he would wear that same, and his hair's all out. I mean, he just looked, he had beast mode going. So he's real scary.
Oh, yeah.
I can't imagine.
Oh, he's always, man. Like, we had the best time. Like, he would hammer me every time. Like, we would just get back off and up. And then he'd always be like, "Hey, are we going out again?" I'm like, "Yeah, man, just give me a second, plan the mission." You know, he'd ready to go, man, all the time. Probably could have just left him out there. Him and Downs, you know. Just,
oh, yeah.
God, that crew we had.
Downs, it reminded me, what was the movie there? Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
Remember when? Yeah. Is it Marlon Brando plays the character? He comes up out of the water and with the face paint on.
That's Sheen that does that,
you know?
Putting
the headband on. That was Adam when we were
absolutely.
There.
You know, he was something,
he'd be out
man.
Back practicing with his bow and arrow. Just, you
know. Three of us brought our bows out there.
And the head shed wasn't too keen on taking bow and arrows out of combat.
Like, you can't go shoot somebody with a bow and arrow. I was like, people have been doing that for what are you talking about? This isn't inhumane. They didn't buy that debate. I was like, think of the factor. You come around a corner and someone's stuck to the wall with an arrow. You didn't hear it.
Yeah, I don't think we need that getting
out
there.
Well, that's when I said that. They're like, "No, you definitely can't carry your bow."
I can't believe when he brought up the influencer stuff, you didn't tell the story how you stole my one of my modeling jobs.
Oh, please do tell.
Well, please, yes.
But yeah, and some a lot of the modeling jobs that I do, he'll help out behind the scenes, make sure everything's squared away, all the tactical advising on it. And so I did a shoot for a helicopter company for a calendar.
He's back.
And then they called me back a couple months later. Yeah, we want to do another shoot. I'm like, okay, when? You know, I'll be out there. They're like, we're actually looking for a mic. We want Mike to do the shoot. I'm like, are you kidding me right now? Now he's stealing my modeling jobs. So you got to
not
do
it. As the model, though.
Yeah, as a model.
Is that you?
Well, that is. So that's what we were just talking about, the influencing. I said, Mike has stolen a couple of my modeling jobs.
I've seen it.
I was...
Holy shit.
When I would go on her model shoots, and I would shoot all the BTS stuff, or, you know, I was guy holding light. And
well, just making sure all the equipment's right. We do a lot of tactical shoots. Yeah, we know why. So you're make sure,
it's really rough.
We can see you.
It's
right?
Really rough understand. Job, as you can see from the calendar.
Mike's with 12 girls. It's so brutal.
Dude, I had your last calendar hanging up, and it's so funny. It was on. It was on.
Hey, that's not me.
It was on your. No. He likes blondes. It was on your month, and Melanie walks in. She's like, "Why do you have a picture of Sam up in your?" First of all, it's not a picture. It's a calendar.
It's a calendar.
And it's her month.
And like, it's better me
It'd be
than some
weird
other
if
girl.
I had somebody else's yeah, if it was month girl. Up. Now, granted, it's still up, but you know.
Well, now we got 2021.
You mean you're hanging out with all these chicks at the same time?
Oh yeah,
at the same time.
Yep,
same time,
at the same
man.
Time. And you think it would be fun, right? How was it though in real life? 12 girls, 12 influencers.
They should have put one of those. You
There's
know,
a reason
like
why they call
reality,
them Valkyries,
like
right?
And
the
they're all military shows.
You know,
like,
they're all military.
They're all 12. Military.
All these chicks are military.
This one, they're all military. Not that one. Half
Hang
of
on.
Them in that.
Put
yeah.
12.
Those
Instagram
are all military
models
girls
in one house in Las Vegas
yep.
for a calendar shoot.
Is that a TV
and then
show?
Just put some cameras up
Should've
there.
Should have been.
Oh, man.
And it was just you.
Well, me and
the photographer were the only males.
We shot a lot of them out on ranges.
And you didn't call for backup.
Well, you know.
No, you know what?
Hey,
while,
man,
we were out there.
Selfishness again.
While we were out there, it was Hunter's birthday, remember? You guys were out
there
for Hunter's birthday.
Right,
when we were
you,
shooting.
Right.
Yep, when we were shooting that calendar.
That's why we
so.
Didn't get invited. Yeah, that we had something else going down.
Yeah, it was Hunter's birthday.
Is that chick a Marine?
I don't know what branch she is. It doesn't say on there, huh? No, I'm not sure.
But the funny story about that shoot was they had a helicopter and it had a saw mounted to the side of it. So we would go up and, you know, the girls are shooting at the targets into the mountain and they come down and shoot some scenes. And I had about four belts around my neck, you know, and because obviously a saw's belt-fed machine gun, so I put the four belts around my neck or so, and I went over, and I was just reloading the machine gun in between runs. And the photographer had snapped some photos of me in between loading it, and somebody gives me a text. They're like, hey, check out the latest...
Ballistic Magazine.
No, it was a Ballistic?
It was
Ballistic
Magazine.
He's like, check out the latest issue of Ballistic Magazine. You're in there. And I'm like, what? So I get it and I open it up and it's that picture of me like reloading it.
Where's that at?
And I know we should have brought that magazine.
Oh, because you know we'll print that out and send it to the SEAL team.
If you can find it, it's on.
It actually said like weapons. You know, it gave a name for the company and said like instructor. You know, for this company. And I was like, wow, like, that's a job I didn't even know I had. I didn't realize I was an instructor.
Did you get paid for it?
Being on set there.
But, well, they didn't even ask. They had him listed as working for Gunship. So I reached out to him and I said, hey, you kind of got this wrong. He doesn't work. He's a former Navy SEAL, owns Forge. So they said, we're so sorry. We'll do an article on him. So then he was in that one with Jack Carr. So they did a whole spread on Mike and Forged. Just awesome. It was just cool that it was in the same one that
Jack
Carr
was. Yeah, that
was
really great of them to do that.
They're going to have to find that. Send it to us.
Yeah. It's on his Instagram. You'll have to.
Yeah, it was pretty cool because... Like I said, Jack Carr was on the cover. Yeah, you guys should definitely get him on the show.
Yeah.
Write that down.
Yeah.
But he was actually the feature, so he was on the cover. And then they had another he basically was talking about different gear that they use in his books, you know, in the Terminal List and talking about how, you know, the new series, the Terminal List series that Chris Pratt's going to be starring in was coming up. And so, you know, he was mentioning like half face blades, you know, it's owned by our good friend, Andy Arbito and Resco Watches. So he brought up all these other team guys. So it was cool just to be in this same
magazine
issue,
yeah.
You know, and they had articles on multiple different team guys. So if you could have picked one issue,
it was
to
a
be
coincidence
in, that was,
for sure.
Yeah. And I didn't even know it. I did the interview with them. They're like, okay, it'll be out next month's issue. So they shot me a couple issues and I see, you know, Jack Carr on the cover of the, you know, the magazine. So that was really cool just to be linked in with all your brothers.
Small guys we grew up with.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Me and him actually had went to Bud's together. We were in first phase. So just, you know, knowing somebody for over 20 years and being featured in the same issue with him was really cool.
It's cool. So what about now? 2021 just kicked off.
Getting ready for the Murph Challenge.
When is that again? That.
So we normally open registration every April 1st, and then it takes place on Memorial Day.
Okay.
Well, that's the culmination. Usually goes out on Memorial Day.
But you can take it whenever.
In you know, like everyone else in the world right now, we're just hoping this pandemic starts passing very, very fast. So it stops interrupting everybody's, you know, business flow and how basically just how the entire world operates. So for us, like Sam alluded to a little bit earlier, was last year our biggest hurdle was, I mean, most of the gyms or a lot of the gyms at least that participate in the Murph Challenge are your smaller functional fitness gyms. Yeah, you know, your CrossFit gyms. Mm-hmm. You know, we're trying to get F45 on board. So maybe put a little word in the ear of your buddy Wahlberg there. Marky maybe Mark. Get them on board.
We're doing it right now.
Talk smack.
So just getting
the way your gym will keep up.
Getting the smaller functional fitness gyms on board, because, you know, obviously the Murph is a challenging workout, and you know, it really gives you know, the civilians and these people that want to support it a little taste of, you know, a team PT. You know, we had Frogman Friday. We come in and, you know, you do your little run, swim, runs, and, you know, of course I say little, but
little, usually we had to run the Aya Loop, which is 13 miles after swimming around Ford Island, which is
3 miles.
Dude.
That was always great. That was always great. You know, the team guy brief, it's just the whiteboard out there. So, like when we were at Team 5 and the Friday's around, you're like, it's Friday, man, hopefully we get off by noon, you know, we'll head down to Danny's. And then all of a sudden, you know, usually it was whoever was briefing it, like, you knew if this dude was a PT stud.
Yeah,
you know, like they would draw you, like, oh, great, that's Coronado Island you're drawing. So we're going to swim halfway around it. Then we're going to go, oh, we're going to run around it. Then we're going to come back to the team. Oh, we're going to do 2-0 courses. Then you're going to go into the range. And then, you know, you're going to do a shooting test. Then you're going to come back out, do another O course. And then basically just haze yourself at the end, for, you know, do some rope climbs. So, yeah, it's always great when you do some rope climbs at the end. Like, let's do 15 rope climbs. So the last 7 turn into fast ropes.
Oh, yeah.
So you
can
get top,
that's
come
how
down.
That's how I busted my leg.
There's no skin left on your hands. You know, you're just all chafed up. And then everybody's sitting at Danny's, you know, just bleeding out your hands with a beer. You're like, teams and shit.
Teams and shit, man. That's what we're saying.
Yeah. Whoever came up with the only easy day was yesterday. Like, there's really a lot that goes into that.
That,
you know,
was
no day in the SEAL
profound
teams is easy.
Statement ever. And I would love to know where they were sitting and what they were doing and what had just happened when that dude looked over and said that.
And after being an instructor for a long time, I mean, you look at whoever created Hell Week, you know, when it goes back to it, like, whoever created that was a genius. And I mean, it goes all the way back to Bud's Class 1. Like, yes, they've changed some evolutions, but the basic blueprint and map for Hell Week is the same. And you know, if it was team guys involved, they didn't know all of the issues that went behind it. Like, can a human being actually stay up for 5 days straight, you know, and still function? What's your brain and all your cognitive skills?
Getting really cold, really hot, and beating the mess out of them.
Exactly. And that's what you always say with, you know, the definition of forged, you know, is to form with great concentration by heating and hammering, beat into shape. And you just compare that to Bud's, and that's exactly, you just think of a piece of wrought iron, red hot, getting hammered, dunked into ice cold water, again, heated, hammered. Like, that is exactly the process, you know, of taking a guy off the street, putting him through Bud's training and becoming a SEAL operator, that whole forging process.
Amazing.
That's a good point.
That's amazing. I mean, they had two outlines of programs that were sound, and they put those together. Well, what they couldn't anticipate is what it would have created, which is us. And it evolves, too, off of each other. That's the best part about it.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny when you talk to some of the, you know, the old World War II frogmen, and there's not many left now, but a lot of those guys would come around the center. And that was a real cool thing about, you know, after I got out of the military, when they hired me back as a civilian buds instructor, because that job just didn't exist. And until, you know, the war was at its height and we just didn't have enough SEALs to actually go to, you know, fight all the battles and then run all the training. So it brought back some SEALs who were actually, you know, prior instructors to come back and do it. So when I got that phone call, that was pretty exciting. And hey, you want to come be a buds instructor? And I'm like, you realize I'm out. I'm a civilian, right? Like, yeah, we'll bring you back to be a buds instructor. So, of course, you know how I'm thinking of this is, all right, I'm going to come back. I'm going to be in charge of the records in first phase. You know, like, no, you're going to be out there. You're going to be wearing a uniform. Just won't have any rank on it. You'll
so I can
be
out
a there civilian leading PTs.
And literally come in and beat people at buds. That's
cool,
what you're telling
me. Yeah, it's, and it's so cool in San Diego when we run into a student. They're like, that's my instructor, Instructor Sowers. I'm like, wow. That's so cool.
Well, you know how it is. Just like your buds instructors.
That's not what they're saying.
yeah, right. That's
what
they say in front of you. Is what they say. Yeah, yeah.
That's what they say in front of you.
But it's funny how much of an effect that buds has on you. Like you can remember, especially first phase, like you can remember every first phase instructor. Like now that, you know, we've been out of the teams for several years. I got to think back sometimes about guys I did platoons with. Be like, oh, yeah, I remember I was in a platoon with that guy. But you never forget those first phase instructors. I mean, that is so just ingrained in your brain. Just
I remember where I met that, where I saw them for the first time. Like, some of them, I remember where I saw them for the first time. Like Mike Getka. Oh, yeah. Terry Pat, you know, them dudes, Randy Bosley, he's like,
oh, I know anyone who had Mike Getka in training will never forget Mike Getka.
Dude, God, he still.
I remember one evolution that we did was stand on the berm and Instructor Getka will throw rocks at you. That was a great evolution. And the funny thing, you know, anybody that's been through buds knows that the worst thing you can do is get your helmet scraped up. Like if your helmet gets scraped up or cracked or broken all night, you're just sitting there painting and scraping your helmet. So now you get more sleep. And you know, and what do board team guys do? They throw rocks. You know, that resonates into the teams when you get there. So I remember people be throwing rocks at us and you're like, you're covering your helmet up because you'd rather take a shot to the, you know, the arms or the legs or the chest rather than stay up all night and paint your helmet.
Well, thanks. Oh, before I guess best thing to say, hey, thanks you guys for coming out. I mean, give us a plug. How do we follow you guys? What's next that we can promote for you guys?
So Forge Clothing, Murph Challenge. TheMurphChallenge.com, Forge.com.
Say it in a sexy voice.
I don't have a sexy voice as Mike. The raspiness. Go ahead, Mike.
Trust me, I don't.
Forge Mike. Yeah.
I don't have the sexy voice.
You want to hear what a voice is?
This summer, one man.
Yeah. Ooh.
The downtown DJ voice.
Yeah.
One man, one mission. That is to take over the world.
There you go.
That's it.
That's awesome, man. Thank y'all for coming
Thank
out.
You.
Seriously.
Thanks for having us.
With us.
I look forward to what the future
is
going to bring.
That wasn't so bad. That wasn't scary.
No, I didn't think it was scary.
Are you still like on edge?
I know. I'm still like, oh.
Yeah, of course she is.
But it's good when Mike just keeps going and starts talking and story timing. So then I'm like, all right.
Story time, rambling
on. I always remember you're the subject matter expert. People are here to hear what you have to say.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the show. If you liked it, share it with a friend. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We're available anywhere you can get your podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, you name it, we're there. Make sure you check out our gear, shop.teamneverquit.com. Mike and Sam, thanks again for coming out.
Thank you so much.
Love
Thank
having you
so
guys.
Much for having us.
We'll see you guys next week.